And this is The Science Show on ABC Radio National, online at abc.net.au/rn, which is how Professor Mark Spiegelman in Israel listens to the program. We had him on a few years ago talking about the mummified corpses he found in Hungary and what they tell him about tuberculosis. Let's join him now on his deck. Tell me where we're sitting. We're overlooking Jerusalem on your balcony. What can we see on the roofs, especially actually those solar panels? They seem to be everywhere.
Yes, it's a law in Israel, and has been for more than 40 years, that every new building has got to have a solar panel, and every one of them has got to be functioning. And in fact, in Israel, the vast majority of hot water is produced by these. We've got a lot of sunshine, and it works. Now, I have a son with three young daughters. It's very rare for them to put on the electricity to make hot water. They get all the hot water from the roof.
We can see next to the panels over there, the sort of barrels, white barrels, that seem to contain presumably water enough for how many showers?
At least three, maybe four, but of course, if you take a long time, less.
So it seems to be working in a place like Israel. It's a bit of a puzzle we don't do the same in Australia.
Can never understand it, you know. We've got plenty of sunshine. And if you're going to cut down your carbon footprint, what a great idea. Think of the percentage of electricity that's consumed by heating water. And remember how much sunshine we have. Maybe not so much in Melbourne, being a Sydney boy, but Sydney, Brisbane, the rest of Australia. We should have that on every roof.
Mark, the last time I talked to you on The Science Show, it was about mummies. Now, these are mummified corpses you found underground, and you were analysing germs. In fact, tuberculosis you're looking for, I think. How's that work gone?
We're currently working on a major project, the evolution of the bacteria over time. And we're also looking at the evolution of the human genome, which is being attacked by the bacteria. So basically what happens, the bacteria may be very primitive. They meet a primitive human immune system. They kill off all those people who are too susceptible, and then the human evolves because the survivors are more resistant to this bacteria. So the bacteria has to change in order to keep attacking the humans. And we started looking at some bones from Jericho, which is one of the oldest cities in the world, and TB is a disease of cities. It's a disease of crowds. The bones of Jericho, many of which came from Sydney University, but a lot of which came also from Cambridge and other universities, they're scattered all over the world, are some of the earliest. The very earliest one is a little village 9,000 years ago called Atlitjam, where we found a woman and child, both of whom died of tuberculosis. And we're actually looking at the genome of bacteria 9,000 years ago. And that's going to be our baseline. And we're going to look at the genome of this bacteria, compare it to the modern one. We're going to go to Jericho, which is a couple of thousand years later.
Not far from here.
As the crow flies, I can get there in 25 minutes in my car. The crow can get there quicker. And this is an interesting project because it's a German National Science Foundation grant given to the Munich University, to the Hebrew University, and the Al-Quds University on the West Bank. And it's actually a joint Palestinian-Israeli-German...
You're running a kind of United Nations project, aren't you?
Well, it's very good because it makes Palestinians and Israelis work together. And this is what you need if we're ever going to become neighbours living in peace. You know, we're working together, we're producing papers together, we work and live in harmony, which, if it only extended beyond our immediate circle, you wouldn't have all these headlines about peace talks, they'd be there.
Now, I suppose many people would be puzzled about the fact that your DNA, your genome and your TB, tuberculosis, lasts 9,000 years.
It all depends on the burial conditions. In some cases, the Jericho DNA isn't so well preserved. The Atlitjam, the 9,000-year-old, is beautifully preserved. We've already got about 30 to 40% of the whole genome of the TB bug of 9,000 years ago. That's because it was preserved underwater. The area was flooded soon after the burials. and has remained flooded for the whole 9,000 years, and therefore the bodies were kept in a stable environment. And the DNA is better preserved than some DNA of people who were buried 3-4 years ago.
Now, you have been round various churchyards, crypts, and various other places. Where have you looked most recently?
The most recent place I've looked is in Korea, where they have some incredibly well-preserved mummies and have completed the whole genome of a 500-year-old hepatitis B sufferer, the genome of the virus. It's well preserved. We've done it. We're now looking at the bioinformatics of that because we can know exactly what protein is produced by the change.
And presumably how fast it's going.
And maybe we'll learn a little bit more about the enemy. And that's always a good thing.
What are you doing in Poland?
Poland is a new project to get the Jagiellonian University in Krakow interested and involved. They've got some mummies from the 16th, 17th centuries. The Hungarian mummies we looked at was the 18th centuries. And they've got some mummies mainly of monks and priests at two monasteries in Krakow. I would very much like to sample them, have a look, because some of them had TB. I'd put my money on that 50% of them will have TB. They've been preserved naturally, like the Hungarian mummies, so there are no preservatives, nothing to interfere chemically with our research. And we're going to see if over, say, a period of short as 200 years, there's been any change in the genome of the bacteria.
Now, presumably, you can't just waltz in and dig up the bones and start doing your work. There are protocols involved at each point, you know, in Korea, in Poland, wherever you are. You've got to go through some sort of fairly delicate system, haven't you?
Well, in Korea, it's incredibly delicate because Koreans, remember, have ancestor worship. These bones belong in a cemetery that belongs to a clan. And the clan actually has books going back to the period of these mummies, and they know exactly who these people are. And the only reason we're at times allowed to do it is because it's being done for medical research, and we're not allowed to keep the mummies or anything. We can sample them, and then the clan takes them back for reburial. The reason they've been dug up, in fact, is because a lot of these cemeteries, like in Seoul, are in the middle of town, and it's become incredibly valuable ground. And so some of the clans have sold the cemetery to be developed into high-rise apartments. But the insistence is that each body is dug up and moved to a separate cemetery, a new one outside the town. And in the course of this, they found that some of the bodies were mummified. They didn't know this 10 years ago. And these mummies, we're looking at them very carefully, minimally destructive, endoscopy, all the modern equipment, doing MRI scans, checking them out. They have incredible preservations. In Poland, we're going to do the same as in Hungary. Endoscopy. We're not going to cut them open or anything. That's past. You shouldn't ever cut a mummy open.
But you have to get permission from the church, presumably.
Oh, yes. That's the next point. Most of these mummies have got a hole somewhere you can put an endoscope in without cutting or tearing any tissues. And we take small samples. We don't take chunks of body.
And as I said, the scientific information, finding out how fast these germs adapt to people and evolve. Can you see that work being applied in any particular way to diseases in modern times?
Well, we're at the same time looking at the host resistance susceptibility genes to infection. That's where it may apply, because we can see which part of the resistance susceptibility gene is affected or changes over time. Because these modern day researchers are working out what determines why some people get infected and some people don't. It hasn't been fully worked out yet. But every time there's a paper, we say, wow, let's have a look at this one. Maybe this is going to be changed in this mummy. Now, it's very expensive work, so we're going much slower than these guys who get million-dollar grants. But we've got a couple of genes we're starting to follow. One is known as the cure or killer gene, which is an interesting gene because it was found to allow the HIV virus to enter the cell. And when I read about this, I said, well, you know, TB also is an intracellular organism. Maybe this gene regulates the entry of TB into the cell. And we've started looking at it, and we've got some interesting but not conclusive evidence that some of our mummies with a certain changes in some of the alleles of the KIR gene seem to be more resistant to TB. We've got to do a lot more work on it, but is it possible that if we find a certain type of the KIR gene that shows no evidence of these people getting TB, that we may have a vaccine? Who knows? My gosh, it's worth a try.
Certainly is. Before we go, the book that's on your table here, The Words to Remember It. You're in that too, aren't you?
Yes, it's an Australian publication. 30 friends, all child Holocaust survivors, were asked to write a chapter in this book of how they survived and how they made it to Australia. All of these were children who were born before or just at the start of the Holocaust. And I think their survival makes very interesting reading.
You really dressed up as a girl?
I spent 5 years of my life dressed up as a girl. I had long blonde hair, which, Robin, looking at me, you realise is something very difficult for you to grasp, considering I have none now. And I wore a skirt, pretty little dress.
But you could have been a little Jewish girl, couldn't you?
No, because you're looking at my nose. That was done in an inter-varsity rugby game. I had it spread across my face. So I had a pert little nose, I had blue eyes, and I had blonde hair. And that is not the image the Nazis painted of a typical Jew. And in fact, what saved me, in a way, was the fact that according to what the Nazis were saying to their people, I was the exact opposite to a Jew. So nobody ever questioned the fact that I was Jewish.
Mark Spiegelman appeared, curls and all, on the front page of the Sydney Morning Herald when that book came out, flanked by his brother Jim, now Chief Justice of New South Wales, and other members of the family. Professor Spiegelman is at the Hebrew University in Jerusalem and University College London.